I was feeling sad and kind of blue. I didn't know what I was going to do. The communists was coming around. They was in the air. They was on the ground. They wouldn't give me no peace. Well, I run down most hurriedly and joined the John Birch Society. Got me a secret membership card, started walking off down the road. I'm a real John Bircher now. Look out.
On this day in 1963, Bob Dylan walked out of rehearsals on the Ed Sullivan Show, which was a huge show back in the day in the early 60s, late 50s, after he said he couldn't perform his song that he wrote called the Talking John Birch Paranoid Blues because it mocked the U.S. military and segregation in America. Dylan said, no, this is what I want to do. If I can't play my song, I'd rather not appear on your show, and walked out the door. So there we are. And we are going to look for the next 40 minutes here on the Mark Steiner Show at local issues that we're facing here in the Maryland area and in Baltimore. We are joined by Dr. John Bullock, professor of political science at Towson University, and just named the most outstanding professor at the Towson University for this year. Congratulations, John.
Thank you so
That's
much.
A great honor. Good to have you.
Good to be here.
That's really great. Congratulations. Jackie Wellfounder joins us by phone, conservative activist and blogger at JackieWellfounder.com. Jackie, welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. And the Reverend Meredith Moyes is with us. She's an ordained minister, writer, community activist, teacher, one of the first African-American women ordained with the Old Catholic Movement in Baltimore, and is currently a climate organizer. You still? No, you changed jobs.
I did change jobs. I'm actually the Baltimore coordinator for an energy nonprofit that seeks to collectively organize people to purchase clean energy.
There we go. So welcome. Good to have you all here. And join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. We're going to talk about the gubernatorial race and the Democratic debate and the Republican debate coming up, the hullabaloo around John Carton and missing votes and why he's in first place in the polls, plastic bags in Baltimore, should they be taxed, should they be banned? There was a piece in this morning's paper about a marina being built down on the Potomac in Charles County, which is the place that where most of the oysters are coming back, but won't be anymore if they build this marina and this conference center. There's going to be some debating about that. And, of course, the big thing, the Supreme Court said that certain prayer could be used, so Carroll County commissioners have now reinstituted Christian prayer before their meetings. Maybe we'll tackle that, too, if we get there. 410-319-8888, your thoughts on all this. The candidates. One person wrote in one of the pieces that I read about the debate that just took place among the on the Daily Beast, wrote this article, piece about Maryland's gubernatorial debate was just a boring liberal debate. what do we think about that?
Well, you know, I don't know if I wanted to say boring, but there's some substance to this, because basically there's not a whole lot of difference between these candidates. You know, they have some personal differences, but policy wise, there's not a huge amount of difference between them. Now at this point, they're all jockeying for the position, which is governor.
Jackie?
I would agree. I think they're all pretty similar.
Why am I not surprised?
But I like Heather Mazur. I think she does a very good job at articulating her vision and her plans. I think she did so a little better than the other candidates.
I agree. And one of the things that shocked me about that, what you just said, Jackie, is that, your thoughts on this, Meredith, is that when you see the analysis of the debate taking place, it's almost as though all people wanted to talk about was the backbiting and sniping between Ganser and Brown. And almost like she wasn't even in the debate.
Right. I think a lot of that has to do with, dare I bring up the S word, sexism. Mm-hmm. But I also think, too, that, this is the days of reality show TV. So if you're going to have two grown men sniping at each other and sword fighting, they're going to take the attention. And, I mean, do I know if this was the plan or not? I don't know. But I do know that Delegate Mazur showed herself to be the calm, rational, level-headed adult in the room while the other two gentlemen gentlemen were really going at each other. I was like, is this the sandbox? Mm-hmm. I had a high school moment flashback on that. I used to teach special ed in high school. So I was like, ooh, all right, this mm-hmm. looked like sandbox behavior. But, it's up to the voters to decide who they're going to pick. Mm-hmm.
But I think you're correct, though, in terms of that back and forth. And Heather Mazur really did a fine job in stating what she was about, and she kind of stayed above the fray. But it's also the way the questions were posed, because the questions were mm-hmm. largely posed to Brown and to Gansler, and sort of left her in the middle, not only physically, but then also between that crossfire.
I mean, in some ways, Jackie, I feel like the Heather Mazur campaign, which has really put out a lot of issues and is really not kind of encumbered by power and money that the other two sides are encumbered by and supported, is kind of being ignored, almost like your Republicans are being ignored.
Yeah, and I think I read Todd Eberle a lot because I think he's pretty objective, and he said he felt like the loser in the debate was largely David Gregory because he didn't do a great job at moderating, and Heather Mazur was kind of put into the background, and it kind of turned into a Gansler Brown point counterpoint show. So, I mean, I really think he contributed to her going in the background. But despite that, she handled herself well and with integrity, I think.
Absolutely.
Folks, did you see it? Did you listen to it? 410-319-8888. What are your thoughts about the Republican debate coming up? Are we going to see something similar, that there's not a huge breadth of difference between these Republican candidates either, other than the fact that there's a huge breadth of difference, I think, between the Democratic uh-huh. candidates and the Republican candidates, but is there not much breadth of difference, Jackie, between those Republican candidates running as well?
I think many people look at it that way, that there's not a lot of difference. Of course, Larry Hogan would like to paint David Craig as a career politician, and you know, the David Craig campaign is reiterating that his experience would bring value, that being governor isn't an entry-level position. So I think all of them have value in their leadership skills. But as far as policy goes, I think overall they are pretty similar. I think what's going to stand out is someone with a proven record of leadership and fiscal responsibility. I think that's the person that'll come to the forefront for conservatives and Republicans.
If I could just say, I think that, I am not a Republican. I consider myself a conservative. I mean, a progressive. But I do think we need a strong Republican candidate. And I'm going to say that because mm-hmm. we need true competition in this race. We've had mm-hmm. 8 years of a certain party running the state of Maryland, and the voters need to understand what is at stake and need a clear choice from both parties. I know a lot of Democrats are jumping up and down and thinking that, we've got this in the bag. But what does it say about our democracy when the perception is that we don't have a strong Republican candidate? And I think that we do need that. We need the competition so that the ideas can get flushed out and people can make the best decisions for their lives.
You know, it's a really important point.
I want to echo that, because that is important not only for our democracy, but also if you think about, just the turnout in terms of elections. The perception mm-hmm. among many Democrats even is that, okay, Brown is sort of, already kind of shooed in, even though people still have to vote. But that's sort of the idea, it's a fait accompli, and it has a lot to do with Mark said in terms of power and money and establishment endorsements. And then the same thing as it relates to the Republicans versus the Democrats. The assumption is that, well, Democrats are going to win anyway, so there isn't a lot of attention around this. And we all suffer if there isn't that competition within the party and then between the two parties as well.
I think I'm going to come back for a quick break, and when we come back from the quick break, I'm going to go right to Jackie and get your thoughts on that and what it takes, because there are certain parts of the state that are very conservative. There are a lot of issues at stake here. Nobody seems to be talking about some of the larger issues facing the future. Some of the Republican candidates are. Heather Mazur is, but few are talking about the stuff that really has to be wrestled with, I think. We're going out now with Al Jarreau's After All. He was born on this day in 1940, the great jazz singer Al Jarreau, born on this day in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
That no matter come what may, love would prevail. Thank you.
Papa was a Rolling Stone. Why? Well, because on this day, Norman Whitfield, the great Norman Whitfield, was born in 1940, wrote that, wrote Cloud Nine, wrote War, wrote Ain't Too Proud to Beg. I heard it through a grapevine. I Know I'm Losing You. Norman Whitfield, one of the great songwriters in Barry Gordy's stable of incredible people around him. And born on this day in 1940, we speak and play all of his songs, but we have important things to talk about. And reminding you on the way to that, that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association, from school funding to Common Core. You can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's one word, MarylandEducators.org. We are joined here in studio by the Reverend Meredith Moyes, who is an ordained minister, community activist, and teacher, one of the first African Americans ordained in the Old Catholic Movement in Baltimore. Currently, she's at a clean energy nonprofit which organizes communities in Baltimore to purchase clean energy collectively. And the man named the best lecturer at Towson State University, Dr. John Bullock, who is professor of political science at Towson University, and Jackie Wellfounder, conservative activist and blogger at JackieWellfounder.com, 410-319-8888. Jackie, it's your turn. Sorry we had to go to break before you could jump in.
No problem. I think, like I said, what people are looking for is a candidate that can back up with their platform and clearly define it. I think people are looking for substance, and I also think people are looking for accountability. And I think it's important to have, you know, that dialogue, as we were talking about before the break. I mean, I'm very much for that. We need to have a strong candidate on both sides of the aisle, so people do have a clear choice.
Yeah, and folks, I'm curious what you think about this gubernatorial race at 410-319-8888, where you might stand, Republican or Democrat, who you like in either primary, and why, what you thought of this debate you just heard about, whether Democrats did. The Republican one is coming up, and we do want to hear your thoughts on all that. 410-319-8888, and people kind of walking away some ways going, oh, well, it's Anthony Rao's race, and nobody should pay attention. And there's a real danger in that, because nobody then comes out to vote, and I think it goes off to the establishment without a fight. And I think that's what people don't want in many ways, is see some of the issues really raised here. Even during the debate, when I saw when Gansler was criticizing Brown's handling of the health care initiative, it wasn't all about what happened to the people of the state. He's just talking about what happened to President Obama. I'm going, what does it have to do? You know, yeah, I mean,
I thought that was crazy because I do know people who are trying to sign up for health care now through the exchange, and they're still having a lot of problems. And the person, whoever is in charge of it, needs to fix it, because people need health insurance. This is not a game. This is not the race to coronation. This is about delivering services to the people. And if you can't do it, does that make you qualify to be governor of this state? That is a real question that the voters need to answer. And we can't play the politics of coronation in this state. There are too many things going on for us to say, well, this person is just, this is going to be our choice. No, the people need to make the choice, and we need people-centered politics.
410-319-8888, your thoughts on this race? And we saw very quickly John Cardin being kind of pushed and lampooned for missing 75% of his committee votes and being excused in that by many of the leaders of the House and Senate, though Mickey Steinberg, the former president of the Senate, former lieutenant governor, many, many years back, wrote a piece in The Sun saying, no, as former president of the Senate, this is a huge issue, missing this many votes, whether it's your wife, your family, or whatever it is. You're down there in Annapolis just 3 months a year, and that's where you need to be.
Yeah, that's very significant, missing 75% of your votes. Look, whether it's the state legislature or the federal legislature, most of the work is done in committees. And so if you're not there for those votes, that's something very substantive. Here's the other piece of it, too. There are two other candidates for attorney general who did not miss these votes, right? So we have Brable, who missed only a handful of votes. Frosch didn't miss any votes. And so it's kind of difficult to make that kind of assertion, just to say, well, family issues. And that's very, a lot of us have families, but again, 75% is a really glaring figure.
Jackie?
I would agree with that 100%. I mean, the deliberation process is very important, and during committee, that's where it happens. I think when you run for elected office, you're making a sacrifice, and that's why you should certainly consult your family. I mean, I understand things happen, but I think in this case, 75%, the number's just too large.
And it's it was just chatted in here. It's only 3 months. They have 3 months to be there.
Right. it's a very quick session. You start in January, right. And if you blink in March, the session is basically over. And right. I think it speaks to the power of privilege, because how many Marylanders can miss 75% of their work duties and not be fired? I mean, just regular old everyday people. So I think that, I mean, the voters will have to decide, is this important? And what does this say about, you know, this person? I understand family issues. We've all got them.
Amen to that.
You know, but 75%, that's a lot.
But the other piece, and I think this is important too, it also speaks to the change in the electoral calendar. Because the election's moved up, now you have delegates and senators who are running for office, you know, but they still have to raise money, still have to campaign, and it's a short session, as was already said, and I'm sure that also complicated the matter.
I've always thought that this whole notion of a June primary was a political obscenity to start with.
It's feeding somebody.
Yeah, it's not feeding the people's needs or interests. That I will say. That should be in September, just before the general election, so it's done. Right. People vote and they move on to the general.
Absolutely. Exactly.
This is just an absurd kind of way of running business, but this is what they're doing to stay in power. And why is it? Do you think why are people talking about these other candidates? And why do you think Cardin is assumed as a front runner? Is it just because his name is Cardin?
He has branding. You know,
mm-hmm.
And
right.
He has branding. So, you know, if you've got Nike and then Nike is up against some of the others, Nike has the power, the positioning and kind of in terms of the branding, it's very strong. But I would urge, and I've urged people that I know, that you need to look at all of the candidates and who represents your values, who should get your vote, because the state, the Attorney General of the state of Maryland is a very important position. If you look at Doug Gansler, and I'm not, you know, supporting him in either way. I'm just saying as his job, he really laid the groundwork for the state of Maryland in terms of same-sex marriage right before long before the referendum. And that was important in terms of the history of this movement. So, you know, being the attorney of the state of attorney general of the state of Maryland is very important.
Who's on the Republican side?
Jeffrey Pritzker, if I'm saying his name correctly.
But there's only one person, right? As far as I've seen? That's
right.
What I thought. That's what I thought, making sure.
Yeah, they had to kind of scramble to get a candidate, right. But they finally did, so.
So, what we're going to try to do here on the Steiner Show is we're inviting all the gubernatorial candidates on this program between now and June and to hear them all, Republicans and Democrats. As you can hear them, they won't come here as a debate, obviously, but they will come here to talk, and we'll bring them in for that conversation. And we're going to get all the AG candidates on as well to hear what they have to say. And we would like to have them come on together if they would. We're going to propose that they join us here live on air to talk together about what it means to be AG and talk to our listeners. So we want to do that, and other candidates too as well. Other races taking place. There are a lot of tight races and interesting races. There's Joan Carter Conway and Bill Henry, which I think is a really it's a much tighter race than people realize for state senate here in Maryland. There are some delegate races here that are very tight as well that people need to hear and talk about on the west side of Baltimore. And across, there'll be, what is it, that number that I read? Is it a 52? Or is it?
There are a lot of people running for office.
No, I meant to say, what's the number of new, no matter what happens, there'll be like 53 new faces in the General Assembly.
I heard it's about a third.
Oh, wow.
A third, right?
Yeah.
Yes, it's a third turnover, and these people will determine the future of our state for the next couple of years. That's why it's so important to get out there and vote.
Jackie, were you about to say what?
I was just going to say, I mean, activism is obviously really important to me, and I just echo what everyone said so far. I think it's very important for us that, you know, our junkies with this sort of thing, it's really important for us to get the word out there. And like she was saying, encourage people to just be informed of who their candidates are. A lot of people just don't even take notice, especially when it's not a presidential election. And they don't realize how important their elected officials are, how much it affects them on a local level. And there will be a lot of change this year. But I think there's a lot at stake.
Folks, join us here, 410-319-8888. Let me know how much you care or don't care about these elections coming up. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. I'd like to see what you think about these elections and why, and who you'd be voting for and why you may not be voting at all. 410-319-8888 is one of my people I know really well. He's a cook at a place I go to eat at. Bruce always says very clearly, I'm not voting. I said, what do you mean you're not voting? You got to vote. He said, I don't care. I'm not voting because there's no difference between the candidates. Is that true? Do we have no difference here?
There's a perception. But of course, there is a difference. And then when we abdicate our right to vote, a right that people died for and shed blood for, not even 100 years ago, we're basically abdicating a good number of rights of our citizenship. And I think that we really need to understand what is at stake. I've heard it said on this show that in the next 50 years, in terms of politics and what will move the state level and the municipal level, will be almost or even more important than what happens on the federal level. I heard it said on this show. So people need to understand we are laying the groundwork for the next 25 to 30 years. And if we don't participate in that process, we're going to be short.
Hey, look, all politics is local.
Amen.
So it is important.
Absolutely.
And I do recognize, even on the Democratic side, there are differences between the candidates. Probably the most clear way to see the difference is if you look at what they were doing prior to campaigning for governor. So if you look at their track record, if you look at their positions, because a lot of people have changed positions or come toward different positions as they've been running. So if you really want to see what they're about, if you look at the last few years, you probably get a better idea.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Join us with your thoughts. I see some calls coming in. We'll go to those phone calls in just a moment. 410-319-8888. You know, and let's go right to the phones here. And 410-319-8888, then I have a question about environment, power, and politics coming up in my next question here of some issues facing the state. And Kathy, you're on the air.
Hi,
Kathy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I had a question about what the panelists thought of the likelihood of Neil Parrott successfully petitioning the transgender rights bill to referendum and what impact that might have on turnout. And for the record, I think that would be a terrible outcome, and I hope he's unsuccessful.
Your thoughts?
I've heard that our allies, our LGBT allies, are gearing up for a fight. I think that it might be likely. A lot of this has to do with misinformation, and I would like to see our community band together to give correct information. Because the issue of transgender people and transgender rights has not been fully flushed out in a public forum. And I say that as a member of that community. That being said, it would be a terrible thing for this to come to referendum. I don't know if it will drive up turnout, but it would be a terrible thing if it were to go to ballot.
Any other thoughts? You have any thoughts on this at all, John or Jackie?
You know, I'll just say this. It's not, you know, the sheer bastion of one party or another. But what tends to happen is that when you politicize issues that have already been decided that people agree on, it tends to be a loser for that elected official, for that party, and for society as a whole. So I don't really see much positive or much gain coming out of this. And I actually don't even see it being successful, even if we're ready to go to referendum.
410-319-8888 is the number here to join us. And Mark, you're on the air.
You know, I think a major issue is that there's not enough media coverage of local elections. So people aren't really aware of what the issues are.
Yep.
And, you know, the importance of, you know, being active and turning out to vote.
Mm-hmm. I think you can fault the media here in town for not covering it the way it could be covered. I mean, I think that's one reason we're going to try to dedicate a bunch of our time in the next month and a half to hearing as much about some of the more controversial races and people running. What are you going to say, John?
I think this is important, right? I mean, so on one hand, you know, you might go – I've gone to a number of forums, and they're not as well attended as they could be in some cases. But back to the media question, what you notice is that they'll follow cases or campaigns that are salacious, right? So if we're
yes.
talking about Henson and McFadden, if we're talking about that because of, you know, all the, you know, the politicization of that. But it isn't so much because of the politics. It's more so because of the spectacle all around the race.
Right.
So those are the ones that get covered as opposed to those really serious races happening at the local level.
Reality show politics.
There you go again. Right.
the real politicians of Baltimore. That's what we're looking at here. And it's a shame because the people do need to be informed.
So let me ask this question. I said I was going to raise this issue. I'm very curious as to your thoughts on this. It was a Supreme Court vote that allowed certain prayer in before political meetings. As soon as it happened, the Cowell County Commissioners decided to go back to having Christian prayer, talking about Jesus and the Savior and more in front of the in front of their meetings. Mm-hmm. What are our thoughts on this? I mean, I just, you know, and what this says about, I mean, A, this clearly shows this huge divide in our federal court system between judges, and it's very mm-hmm. political. Mm-hmm. People can talk about it being the kind of interpretation of the Constitution, but it's really a political divide in many ways in our country. So what do we think about this, Meredith?
As a minister of the gospel, ordained minister of the gospel, I do not like this. I mean, I say that because as a sacramental Christian, oftentimes our view progressively as well, our views get left out. And I don't feel comfortable in a public setting where people are invoking their policy in the name of Jesus, because for my people, that has not been bode well for the last 350 years. It leaves so many people out, particularly those who engage in non-belief and agnostics. And I personally believe that this is an establishment of a religion, and we are a pluralistic society. There are people who believe in all types of things, and I don't feel that mm-hmm. it is the right way to go. We are going in the wrong direction here.
Right. I'm sorry, Jackie?
Well, I'm obviously in the minority here. I do agree with the decision. I think it upheld our Constitution and our Judeo-Christian founding principles. And I think it also, I mean, the way I read it, I think it leaves it open, too. It doesn't necessarily have to be a Christian prayer, but there are options where it can be a more sectarian prayer. I mean, I think in some cases people choose a more general prayer, but overall I think they should have that option.
You know, I tend to come on the side of really being more ecumenical if you're going to do it at all. But here's something that I think is really sort of missed. In our Constitution, there's a separation, you know, of church and state. And the thing that I think is oftentimes a misnomer is that this idea that this is a Christian nation at its founding and that the founders were Christians, quite a few of them, more often than not, were actually agnostic.
Right.
And so it's sort of a revision of history when we say that, you know, it's a Christian nation. But the other thing to consider as well, I mean, there's one idea. If you look at what happens at the city council level here in Baltimore, you would see a rabbi, you see an imam, you see a Christian minister do a prayer, and they rotate. You know, I have friends who are Jewish, friends who are Christian, and friends who are Muslim. And guess what? Sometimes we pray together, but it's a non-denominational prayer. We can pray to the same God, but also we have to have space for those who have unbelief, right, or non-belief. So I mean, to really ensconce this in local activities, I think is somewhat problematic.
I think they need to start meditating before these meetings, because some of the policies coming out of there are completely not people-centered. So
hey,
I would say that maybe there needs to be a chaplain Zen priest who can teach them how to go into deep meditation so that we can get laws that really support the people.
That's actually a great idea, actually. You know, some quiet time.
Yes.
There's a whole piece about this. It's very tough. I mean, I remember many, 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 many years ago when I was a teenager, and at City, I was the one kid among 3,000 students who refused to take part in opening exercise and would walk out. It wasn't a very popular thing to do at the time. And it was because I felt, you know, that we should – and over the years, so that's changed in me, and that the school I finally graduated from, that was finally allowed to graduate from, that was out of state, used to start the school day off with morning music. Mm-hmm. Where a piece of classical music was played, and everybody would sit and be quiet and meditate, as you were suggesting, and then do whatever prayers they want to do or not do, and then went on with their day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think right. there's a real question here. I mean, I guess that's part of the point is that always confused me is that when we decide who to have prayers in front of a meeting, I mean, what would you think would happen if the Carroll County Commission, someone got up and decided to do a Muslim prayer? And or a prayer that was broad and didn't include any kind of God being at all. I mean, how do we define that?
Well, that's the thing. It is difficult, and that's why for me, I mean, if they did do something on a rotating basis, I think that would be great. If they did do something in a more general sense, I think that would be great, too. I don't think the name of Jesus Christ has to be invoked in a prayer, even though, because I recognize that might be my personal choice, but it wouldn't be the choice of everyone in the room. So I think overall it should be up to them to decide on a local level, as long as they're not, you know, leaving anyone out or overly proselytizing or coercing anyone into participation, as the ruling mentioned. And I think it shouldn't also detract from the issues. I mean, I would be all for meditating for the meeting if that means, or before the meeting, if that means more actual work is getting done.
Mm-hmm. We have a tweet from Rebecca. Said, yes, capital letters, calling out those who say this country was founded on Christianity, Christian values, hashtag rewriting history.
And I also I would agree with the ecumenical prayer standpoint. My issue is with the dogged insistence that the invocation of Jesus be the focal point of this. That's my issue. You know, right. Have somebody invoke Nam Myoho Renge Kyo one meeting, Hare Krishna the next. You know, have someone read a passage on ethics from an ethical society. I mean, there are a lot of ways that everybody can be included, but just to single out this one deity to be the focal point, I think this is where they're missing the point.
And I will say that it's not just a question of discomfort, but it is uncomfortable for people who are in a group where they want to say a prayer beforehand and the prayer is to a specific deity saying, for those of us who aren't Christian, or that you have to be part of that. And not to be part of it, I don't mind being part of it, but that having to kind of say a prayer to something that you don't believe in. Mm-hmm. It's something nobody should have to do in America, right. It seems to me. Right. I mean, we should have the right to pray.
Yes.
We should have the right not to pray.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I agree with that.
Absolutely.
You know, a quick question. We have a few minutes left. I'm just going to hear your thoughts at 410-319-8888. The plastic bag issue in Baltimore, whether or not some people want to ban them, some people want to tax them. We had the styrofoam issue coming up. That was put aside, and the containers we use for food, and we wanted to change those because they were harmful to the environment. But that was put aside because of the kind of industry lobbyists were very strong in city council to lobby against all these things. Mm-hmm. Then you have the piece in the paper this morning about the marina being built in Charles County that will take away the one place where the oyster beds were really growing and rising instead of trying to bring the oysters back. So there is this question of environment versus quote-unquote progress and development. Mm-hmm. What do we think about all this?
Look, it's not only political science professor, but also a planner as well, and someone who has environmental.
That's right. You were on the D.C. Board of Planning, weren't you?
Yeah, I was a transportation planner there, and so my background is also in that. And so I started thinking about, you know, we talk a lot. Think about the bag issue. We talk a lot about recycling in America, but we forget the other two R's, right? Reduce, reuse, and recycle, right? Mm-hmm. And so we can reduce the amount of plastic bags, you know, by having that fee on it. Reuse them. I do it. I mean, my wife and I. We go shopping again. We use those reusable bags. But then for the plastic ones we get from sometimes, I walk my dog. I do other things, you know, with those bags and then recycling. But it's important for us to think about sustainability. I mean, not just about today, but what about future generations? What is that doing? Whether it's bags that are flying around some of the communities that I travel in, or whether they're things that are going into our waterways. These are things that are important that we have to be thinking about today. And then we think about the health of our bay. That's like our most precious natural resource for the state of Maryland, right? I mean, it's something that we really do need to protect. So there has to be this balancing, and it can't just be about just about development. Development is important, but we also have to think about the environment as well.
As a person who works in environment and enviro circles, I do think that's a false dichotomy, because I think we can have progress. Mm-hmm. We can have progress by developing systems and investing in systems that protect our environment. And I think that this is my concern, though, about the plastic bag, is that those who can least afford it, how can we make it so that everybody can participate in this program and contribute to reducing trash in Baltimore City? In terms of the styrofoam, those people who lobbied for styrofoam, please come in front of my house and pick up the various chicken boxes that inevitably get left on the Monument Street corridor. I'm very concerned about that. So we need to reduce trash. We also need to make sure that everybody, whether you make $1 million or you make a dollar a day, can participate in this, and that speaks to environmental justice.
Jackie, go ahead.
Well, I mean, as a conservative, I still believe strongly in being a good steward of our environment. So I think it's an important issue in that regard. But we've also seen many businesses leaving Maryland, and I have a concern about another tax or higher taxes that are going to push more businesses out. And also the feasibility of whether this will actually save money or whether it's going to cost people more money, whether it's going to raise costs. I mean, I think education is important. and communities need to work together to, you know, make sure trash is picked up, like she was saying. I mean, that's an important issue.
And I think that people, and you know what, a lot of people don't realize that Theodore Roosevelt was the father of American conservatism in terms of the environment.
Right, conservation.
Yeah, he was the father of conservation. So this idea that, you know, environment is and climate is somehow just a liberal issue is not true. And
right.
I think that we need to band together to deal mm-hmm. with climate change, because this is a global thing. This has nothing to do with party.
We got 2 minutes left here. John and then Jackie.
Yeah, really quickly, I think one of the great things we could do is look to other cities that have done this before, right? So if you look at D.C., you've seen over 60% reduction in terms of their plastic bags. One of the things I thought was interesting when I visited San Francisco, that you can barely even find a plastic bag there. And if you want a bag, they will give you a recyclable bag. I think that's the way that you can include
Absolutely.
Everybody in this. And so if you have a minimal charge, 5 cents for it, for even a recyclable bag, then they can carry that around in additional times. But it can be done. We just have the political will to step outside the box and think differently about some of these issues.
Jackie, closing thought.
For me, on a local level, I just want to say I wish people could work together more closely. I'm president of our local Republican club. I actually have good communication with the president of our local Democratic club. She just invited me to an event this weekend. And I just think we need more of that bipartisan cooperation, and we could get so much more done. Mm-hmm.
Jackie Wellfounder is a conservative activist and blogger at JackieWellfounder.com. Joins us here in the air, Dr. John Bullock, just named what was it called?
Faculty Member of the Year.
Faculty Member of the Year. There we go. Towson University, where he's professor of political science, and the Reverend Meredith Moyes, who is a community activist in clean energy in this community, an ordained minister, and often a guest on the show, Reverend Meredith Moyes. Good to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
And reminding you all, if you listen, we're talking about the environment. If you listen to sound bites every week, we do here on Tuesdays at 10, we want to hear from you and learn how we can bring healthier food to our families and communities. If you'd like to be part of a larger conversation about food in our communities, city and region, please join us for these two extraordinary town hall meetings we're having this week. Tuesday night at 7, we'll be at the Reverend Heber Brown's church at the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, 430 East Belvedere Avenue, with Reverend Brown, Ari Witkin, and Dr. Jeanette Hablula to talk an interfaith discussion on how we teach about good food and healthy food and how we access that. And then at Thursday at 7, at the Central Branch of the Enoch Pratt Library, we'll have a lively discussion about how our food is taken over by industrial agriculture, how we can reclaim it, featuring Christopher Leonard, who wrote the book, The Meat Racket, The Secret Takeover of America's Food Businesses. So all this for you to join us. So you can call 443-804-1252 for more information, 443-804-1252 for more information, or just come join us Tuesday night at 7 p.m. at Reverend Brown's Church, Pleasant Hope Baptist Church at 420 East Belvedere, and Thursday night at 7 at the Central Branch of the Enoch Pratt Library as we discuss The Meat Racket, The Secret Takeover of America's Food Business with author Christopher Leonard. We're going to take a very brief break and come right back. We are going out here with The Persuasions, Buffalo Soldier. I love The Persuasions. I love this song, Buffalo Soldier. 1945, J. Otis Washington, who's one of the great singers with The Persuasions, was born this day in 1945. And he worked with Joni Mitchell, Stevie Wonder, Don McLean, so many more. Listen to that voice. There he is. Buffalo Soldiers. We'll be right back.
Buffalo soldier, tell me.